talking about the issues that matter to Montana, statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint. I'm really excited because we have a special guest with us right now. We've got Judge Dan Wilson, candidate for the Montana Supreme Court. Judge Wilson, thanks so much for joining us.
David, thank you. It's a real privilege to be on your show.
So, I think maybe where we start is if you could just introduce yourself. I think a lot of listeners may not know too much about you. If you want to just give yourself a little introduction and some of your background.
Sure. Well, my family roots go back in Montana four generations, where my great granddad homesteaded south of Malta up on the High Line in 1913. My folks grew up there. I was born in Billings in 1964, so I'm 59 presently, and I have lived in Kalispell since 1995, where I moved there as a prosecutor working for the county attorney then. And in 2017, I was elected first to the district court bench, and I've served as a district court judge there in Kalispell now in my second term.
Cool. So what led you to run for the district court bench the first time?
Well, I was, prior to that, elected as a justice of the peace, and I had been in private practice of law for about 10 years and decided that I'd like to try being a judge, and I wasn't sure that I wanted to make it my life and my career. And so I ran for justice of the peace in Flathead County and thought, if it's not my cup of tea, I'll just stop after one term. But I enjoyed it quite a lot, and when a vacancy came open on the district court in 2016, I ran for it then. But my passion for the law is simply to get it right. A lot of lawyers go into the practice of law thinking that they want to specialize in one area. They want to represent one kind of party in one kind of lawsuit primarily, and I was never that kind of lawyer. I always wanted to branch out. I wanted to try every sort of law. But more importantly, I wanted to represent people with different viewpoints and perspectives in the litigation. So while I was a prosecutor for about 5 years, I also represented people accused of crimes at state and federal courts. And I can tell you that the system looks much different from that standpoint. Also, it looks different for litigants in civil cases, whether they're the plaintiff who brings a lawsuit for some injury or loss, or a defendant who's being sued for that alleged injury or loss. And so my goal was always to be able to understand our system from the broadest possible perspective and not simply pigeonhole myself to one type of law or to one type of client. And I think that sort of perspective is what finally convinced me I was ready to become a judge, because I think I can look at a legal situation more objectively, having represented clients on virtually every aspect of our legal system.
Okay, we're up against a quick break here. We'll come right back with Judge Wilson right after this. David Noble in for Aaron Flint.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint. We are talking right now to Judge Dan Wilson, a candidate for the Montana Supreme Court. Judge Wilson, during the break there, we got a message that came in here on the Montana Talks app from an unnamed listener in Kalispell saying, most important question for Judge Dan Wilson, how does he feel about the Constitution and the parents' fundamental right to care, custody, and control of their children? Please ask this very important question. I'm not sure, Judge Wilson, like, if you can answer that or how, but I wanted to at least read that just because that's what the listeners are asking, and I think there's probably a number of other people out there kind of wondering that same question about the parents' constitutional right to the care, custody, and control of their children. I guess any comments from you on that?
Well, it is a vital right, and it's one protected by both United States and the Montana Constitution, and I've been very careful as a judge to safeguard and protect those rights. We also have, in the last couple legislative sessions, have a legislature which is also very keen to protect those parental rights, and so we've seen limitations on the ability of the government to remove kids from situations of neglect or abuse and to make sure that they have attorneys right away and we get prompt hearings within a few days of the child's removal. So I believe that our Montana Constitution is very robust in its protection, and we also need judges like myself who are committed to protecting those rights when push comes to shove in these very difficult cases.
Yeah, you know, one thing you said in the first segment that really stuck out to me was when you said sort of you have a passion to make sure you get the law right. And for me, you know, so I'm an attorney. I'm a licensed lawyer here in Montana. I'm also obviously a conservative and a Republican, but I'm still a true believer in the sort of the concepts behind our Constitution and an independent judiciary. I think you see a lot of Montanans out there who are pretty jaded when it comes to the judiciary. Maybe there's some Republicans that want somebody to come in there and sort of, you know, start being real aggressive from a conservative viewpoint. But for me, I'm looking for more for somebody who is a true believer in the proper role of the judiciary. And if you, I'm assuming you kind of agree with that and the ideals of what a judiciary should look like. And obviously we haven't always seen it function that way. If you want to comment on any of that.
It's a terrific discussion to have. And we have this sense or belief that people around the state think a certain thing about the Supreme Court. And I have been to any number of meetings and I've talked with people across the political spectrum. And what strikes me in speaking to all of them is whether they come from the left or the right, those who truly care about the Supreme Court as I do actually want justices on the Supreme Court who aren't there driven by a particular political agenda or their own personal beliefs, but out of primarily a commitment to the Constitution as it's written and to the rule of law as a guiding principle. In other words, something higher than the judge or justice himself or herself. And that's been my commitment, and that's why I think my campaign has been so successful and why the message that I'm giving is resonating.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of, you know, where this is coming from is I think a lot of people feel that in the past, maybe we haven't seen that sort of jurisprudence out of the Montana Supreme Court. You know, I don't know if you had a chance to hear yesterday, constitutional law professor Rob Nadelson was on yesterday kind of criticizing maybe some of the decisions of the Montana Supreme Court historically. He's written some articles about that stuff recently. So, you know, to hear a candidate talk about, you know, genuinely going there and just applying the laws written and setting your personal opinions aside is quite refreshing.
Well, and Rob Nadelson is a former U of M law professor, and he's a respected scholar. I'm not in the same sort of position, don't have the same kind of luxury to criticize opinions of the Montana Supreme Court because I'm a district court judge and bound to follow them in any event. But there has been, even in our Supreme Court cases, and most recently in the decision that a majority of our Supreme Court held various statutes passed in the recent legislature about voting rights to be unconstitutional, but two of the justices in that case, in a dissent led by retiring Justice Dirk Sandifer, whose seat I'm running to fill, charged the majority with being a super legislature and engaging in what he termed a sleight of hand reasoning. And while there are criticisms that are being leveled by various people toward the Supreme Court, in this case, there was actually two members of that court who agreed that, at least in that decision, in their view, there was what we call legislating from the bench. And I think it's unfortunate when we have that level of discordance on our court and that they're not agreeing on what our constitutional norms or what our Constitution actually says.
Yeah, well said. I think that from the public's perspective, when you've got a dissent like that and a dissent that's leveling those kinds of charges, I think that really does sort of raise a lot of questions in people's minds about the integrity of the court. And it is unfortunate when you've got existing members of the Supreme Court even going so far as to say stuff like that. We're up against another break. We got a few more minutes here with Judge Wilson, candidate for the Montana Supreme Court. We'll be right back. This is David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint.
Hey, we were talking about restaurants earlier here on Montana Talks, and I don't know if you guys have gotten a chance to check it out yet. I have. I've gotten to check it out. The Montana Sky Restaurant. The Montana Sky Restaurant. It's on the 20th floor of the DoubleTree Hotel, right downstairs from us. We're on the 23rd floor. It's got the same great view that we have right now, the Beartooth Mountains and more. Great food, though. I mean, I had their carne asada tacos, if you want something a little less expensive. Really good chunks of steak in those tacos. And then speaking of steaks, I had their peppered steak. I forget the fancy name for it, but it was really good. I'd encourage you. They're open for breakfast, you know, every morning, and then open for dinner as well. Check out the Montana Sky Restaurant. I think I just saw a billboard downstairs. They're going to have a Mother's Day brunch coming up soon as well. So get that on your radar.
AGE.
UFC 300. We will be in the house for UFC 300 in Las Vegas. Aaron Flint here. Our coverage brought to you by the Fusion Fight League here in Montana.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble in for Aaron Flint. We're talking to Judge Dan Wilson, candidate for the Montana Supreme Court. And we've also got Tim in Billings on the line that wants to jump in on this conversation. Tim, what did you want to add?
Good morning, gentlemen. I just have a couple quick questions for Mr. Wilson. I like to ask this of everybody that's running for elected office. Can you give me the definition of inalienable? And then the other question I have for you is, can you think of a single greater threat to our constitutional republic than a weaponized or biased judiciary system?
Great questions. Thanks so much. Dan, Judge Wilson, were you able to hear those questions?
I did. There are great questions, and inalienable means, according to its plain definition from the dictionary, it cannot be abridged. That's what inalienable means. And I do agree with the sentiment of your caller, if I understand his question correctly, that a judiciary that wanders or strays or runs outside of its lane merely to interpret faithfully and apply the Constitution and the laws, both of Montana and the United States, is doing a great disservice and doing damage to our system of government. We have three co-equal branches of government, and while we are famous for describing those co-equal branches in relationship to one another in terms of checks and balances, it's also important for us to recognize that when you have co-equal branches of government, none can assert itself or must not assert itself to any greater or higher degree than any of the others. So, yes, I do agree with that sentiment that from the caller, Tim, that a judiciary that's out of control is a danger to a republic.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that as well. And I mean, from my perspective, there's kind of two parts to that. One is the part about, hey, we just don't like it if the judiciary is, for example, invalidating sort of reasonable election integrity laws. But there's a second piece to that, is that when you have a judiciary that is biased or activist or legislating from the bench or however you want to describe it, I think the bigger sort of problem and threat is is that what that causes is that causes the public to no longer respect the rule of law and the judiciary as much as they otherwise would. And so when you've got an activist judiciary, in my opinion, they're kind of undermining themselves, because now people are no longer respecting that role of the judiciary. And so one of the reasons I think these races in 2024 for the Supreme Court are so important is so that we can get a court back in place that is, you know, sort of strictly following the Constitution, because that will then increase the public's respect and confidence in the rule of law and in the judiciary.
Right. And your comment touches on what I believe is an important concept for us to be discussing in this campaign, and that is, what is legislating from the bench? And in my view, legislating from the bench means a judge who, instead of following the law itself, seeks to insert his or her own views as a rationale for the outcome of a particular case. A judge should not have any stake in the outcome of a particular case, and the only interest that a judge or justice should have in the outcome is faithfully following the Constitution itself and the rule of law. So judicial decision making has much more to do with personal restraint than almost any other thing.
Amen to that. We've got Lucas in Kalispell that wants to jump in on the conversation. Lucas, what did you want to add?
Hey, I was just going to say, so I'm running for state house here in District 8 in the legislature, and 100% the judicial reform issue has got to be the number one priority of the next legislative session, because I only jumped in halfway through the conversation, just driving a little bit here, but it is critical what these guys are doing. They strike down every these election integrity laws saying you can't have paid ballot harvesting. They say that a law protecting children from transgender surgery is unconstitutional. You know, where in the Constitution does it mention transgender surgery on kids, that's a right? It doesn't. You know, these judges, they make up, and obviously it's most of them, at least on the Montana Supreme Court right now, and that's the issue. They make up what they personally want, and then they've enforced that on the entire state. And what we saw last time around in the 22 election was Planned Parenthood spent over $100,000. I forget if it was either against Jim Brown or for Ingrid Gustafson, but either way, spent over $100,000 supporting the far left judge, and now she is ruling on Planned Parenthood. She's not recusing herself. I mean, it's a massive concern. So it is critical that we elect both Dan Wilson and Corey Swanson to the Supreme Court, because without just common sense judges, the legislature can't get anything done.
Lucas, we only got a minute left here, so I want to thanks for jumping in, Lucas. Judge Wilson, I think I don't mean to insert a ton of partisan politics or legislative politics into this discussion, but I think Lucas kind of raises this sort of concern about what appears to be from the public looking at this, it appears to be sort of this fight between the Supreme Court and the legislature. And I don't know if you can even comment on that, Judge Wilson.
Well, it's good to see that the conversation that we're having around these issues and around the state is such a robust one, because there are deeply held concerns that people want to see those concerns addressed in this campaign and election season, and I'm glad to hear that these conversations are happening, because they need to.
Judge Wilson, we only got a couple of seconds left here. What can people do to support you?
Well, you can support me. Go to my website at wilsonforjustice.com. You can donate there, but more importantly, inform yourself, educate yourself, and tell your friends.
Amen to that. Well, thank you so much, Judge Wilson. Really appreciate you joining the show today. We're going to be talking to the other candidate as well here, Corey Swanson, county attorney out of Broadwater County. Corey, thanks so much for joining.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. How about you?
I'm doing very well. Appreciate you giving me an opportunity to come on the show, and hopefully I can answer some questions, and if I can provide any witty anecdotes, I'll attempt to do so.
Fantastic. Well, I'll ask you kind of the same thing I asked Judge Wilson at the beginning, which is for folks that don't know you or don't know your background, I guess if you could just kind of introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to clarify, I heard you just a second ago as you transitioned to me. I'm not running against Judge Wilson. There's two open seats on the Supreme Court. Chief Justice McGrath is retiring. I'm running for the Chief Justice position. And then Associate Justice Sandifer is retiring, and Judge Wilson's running for the Associate Justice position. So
thank
we
you.
Are not actually running.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that.
So I grew up in northern Montana. When I was young, my folks lived along the High Line. And then my dad was transferred down to Bozeman. He worked with the Montana National Guard. So I ended up going to Manhattan High School outside of Bozeman there.
Oh, and that's right. That's right, because I forgot that me and you both went to Manhattan.
Yeah, that's right.
What a great town Manhattan is. What a great high school that is, too.
And I don't think at the same time, though.
No, definitely. I think I'm maybe a bit younger than you. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm getting kind of old, I'm getting up there. So,
but either way, what a great thing to have two Manhattan folks here.
Yep, yeah, it's a great town. So then I went to a year of MSU. The goal was to be a rancher, but was a family didn't have a ranch, and so I switched gears a little bit and graduated from Carroll College. And law school at University of Montana. There's only one law school in Montana, and that's in Missoula. And then along the way, I did some time in the National Guard. I joined when I was in college. I'm actually still in, but I'm slowly moving my way toward the exit of retiring from the National Guard. But that's been 27 years now in the military as a citizen soldier, having a full-time career outside of that. And have deployed a couple of times around the world doing some of those missions. When I was young, in both in college and coming out of college, I did a lot of work in politics. And then when I ended up practicing law, particularly when you get into really heavy practice of law, when I worked for the Department of Justice, when Tim Fox was the Attorney General, and now as a county attorney, I'm in my 10th year as a county attorney. You just get so consumed with the work that I've kind of been a stranger to statewide politics for at least 10 years, probably longer now. So coming back to campaigning, I'm relearning a lot of things I probably knew when I was younger, when I helped on campaigns. But certainly in terms of the legal issues, gosh, everything I've been doing in my career seems to be relevant and important in the Supreme Court campaign. So I'm married. I have two children, and we live in Townsend. And my wife is a speech therapist, and our kids are just in that really busy, fun time of life of sports and activities and school. And I don't know. It's what else do you want to know? I can tell you.
Well, now I'm wondering. This may be the toughest question you get all hour long. But now I'm wondering, when the Manhattan Tigers play I think it's the Townsend Bulldogs.
Okay.
Who do you vote? Who do you root for?
Oh yeah, it's so funny because when we first moved to Townsend, I think in 2013 and then 2014, Townsend's football team won the state championship and beat Manhattan.
Oh no! Hey, we're up. Hey, Corey, we're up against the break. I got to take the break. We'll be right back. David Noble in for Aaron Flint.
How to claim charitable deductions. I'm Brian Brenberg with your Fox Business Tax Tip coming up.
I'm Emily Campagno, and this is the Fox True Crime Podcast, bringing you closer to the story than you ever thought possible. Subscribe at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. These are the stories that keep you up at night.
If you have large charitable deductions for 2023, you may want to check about an itemized deduction. That's because there were changes in 2021 limiting the amount for those taking the more common standard deduction. An individual taking a standard deduction on their 2023 return may claim up to $300 for charitable deductions. That number doubles to $600 for married couples filing jointly. Those with extensive donations can claim up to 60%, but must itemize. Watch The Big Money Show weekdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on Fox Business. Brian Brenberg, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
We're talking to Corey Swanson, a county attorney in Broadwater County, candidate for the Montana Supreme Court. Corey, we were just talking there before the break about the state championship game with the Townsend Bulldogs and the Manhattan Tigers. I remember playing high school football in Manhattan, and we hadn't made the playoffs in decades and decades, and then Coach Dale McQuarrie came on board and led us to our first playoff appearance, and then after I left, they just kept doing better and better and ended up in the state title game. But I guess congrats to Townsend on that victory.
Yeah, and when I played there, we were not having playoff runs either, I can tell you. But yeah, I'm really glad Manhattan's won a state championship, at least one, maybe two. I'm thrilled to see the town do well. We have lots of friends still there, and you know, when we had games, I made sure I talked to everybody, the old friends on both sides of the court or the field. But it's great to be connected through all the small towns.
So we got a couple of callers on the line. We'll go to Jeff and Polson here and get his input. But first, Corey, I just kind of wanted to ask you generally, you know, why are you running for the Supreme Court? And then more importantly, sort of what is your approach to jurisprudence that you can talk about?
Yeah, no, I think right now Montana's at a very unique moment, and I think we have a good opportunity to really make some changes on the Supreme Court. And I don't mean that in terms of everything the court's doing is bad. I certainly don't agree with that. But I do believe in a methodology of how to interpret the law in a judicial philosophy that I do think is different from at least the majority of the current court. I do believe that courts and judges should interpret the law in a textualist way. By that, I mean, you're more focused on interpreting what the law actually means based on the text of the Constitution or the statute or the whatever the issue may be that you're looking at. And the judge really has to have self-restraint and not try to rewrite the law or move the decision in a way to get a predetermined outcome, which we often refer to that as activism. And the reason I think that's important is because the Supreme Court, when it issues an opinion, is issuing a ruling of law that everyone else wants to be able to understand, interpret, and rely upon. And if the court is moving the law too much in terms of overturning precedents or rewriting or reinterpreting the law in a way that's changing policy, I think the court then is moving in a way that, number one, is hurtful for the law, but number two, is really moving into a rewriting the law arena that should be left to the policy political branches, meaning the executive and the legislature together, and the court should focus on interpreting it. So I consider that a judicially conservative view of how to do the job. I don't think that's the same as politically conservative, because a judicially conservative methodology may result in a, you know, interpreting or upholding something that's politically liberal. But the goal is that the judge is focused on the law, not focused on the policy outcomes or trying to pick an outcome, pick winners or losers based on their personal preferences.
Well said.
That's my goal.
I think that's very well said. We do got Jeff and Polson who wants to jump in on the conversation. Jeff, what did you want to add?
Hey, thank you for your service, Corey. I appreciate it. Two things. One really serious, one a little bit tongue-in-cheek. The first is that I had the privilege of testifying before the Public Service Commission on Monday. And as I was listening to the proponents of the rule that the neo-Marxists would like to bring in to on the PSC versus dealing with climate change and trying to stir things up there, one of the things they brought up was Held v. Montana. And I don't know if you can talk about that or not, but in my mind, that was a very dangerous case for a lot of reasons. When the Supreme Court upheld it, they set a precedent, and that's not only for Montana, but for other states as well. So I wonder if maybe you could talk to that if you can. And then my tongue-in-cheek comment is we famously had a Governor Mark Roscoe, who was also a military JAG, and I was wondering how you would differ from the Mark Roscoe approach to judicial activism.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate the call. Corey, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll do the second part first, Jeff. Thanks for that. So let me clarify. I'm in the National Guard. I've been in the National Guard, but I'm not a JAG officer. So I'm an armor officer. I spent most of my career in the Army, or in the armor and the infantry. There's a unit called the 163rd that's kind of throughout Montana. And so we've been all my deployments have been combat deployments with armor infantry units in the Middle East. So I don't know that matters, but I was in law school. I was already a lieutenant, and there were folks who wanted me to go JAG, and I just was concerned it was going to be too boring. I wanted to have the outlet to go out in the hills and do gunnery and do all those things. If my day job was being a boring lawyer at the desk, so I never did do the JAG part. So Governor Roscoe was Attorney General. He was never a judge, so I don't know that I have a good sense of what his judicial philosophy would have been as a judge. I know how things change. At the time when he was Attorney General and Governor, and I was in college and probably even in high school, he was wildly popular, widely respected. I thought he was a very good Attorney General, very good prosecutor. I prosecuted some tough cases, and based on his career before that, the number of serious cases he prosecuted, I think he's far and above a better or more experienced prosecutor and lawyer than I was. So at the time, he was wildly popular. I know now that's been over 20 years, and America's political, the conversation has shifted. And I can tell you, America's divided, and we see, it's dangerous to bring up politics at the Thanksgiving dinner table sometimes. I don't know. I guess what I would say is that's part of why I think the judiciary has to be so impartial, because we are we're in the midst of a political fight, culture wars, where everyone is tempted to run to the courthouse and beat the other side on a policy issue with a court ruling. And I think the courts need to stay out of the policy making, leave that to the political branches. We need to interpret the law. And there will be times. I mean, I'm going to talk more about the legislature and all that, but there will be times when the legislature passes a law that ultimately I would have to look at and go, that is unconstitutional. I suspect that's going to happen. I can't say for sure, but I suspect it is. But if that does happen, it will be very clear, based on a clear constitutional standard, based on the rules of jurisprudence, where it's a constitutional ruling, not, hey, I just don't like the law that the legislature passed, and therefore I'm going to strike it down. Judges have to keep themselves in that role so we don't get dragged into the shifting battles of policy arguments and political arguments and the culture wars that are coming. So
well,
let's go to the first part. Sorry. I'll pause there if you want to say anything, David.
No, I didn't have it. I was going to move on. We had another caller that wanted to jump in. Did you want to address another piece of what Jeff had to say?
Yeah, let me cover the climate change thing real fast. So the Held case was decided in district court in Lewis and Clark County, and it was appealed to the Montana Supreme Court. That was the case that said that Montana had with a climate or a law saying that state permitting or environmental decisions won't consider climate change or carbon, et cetera. And that the district court declared that was unconstitutional. So the Supreme Court didn't actually yet make a ruling on the merits. What the Supreme Court did was deny the stay of the order. So the order did go into effect, But the merits of that case haven't been heard yet. They're being briefed right now. I don't know how long it's going to take for them to decide on that, so I don't think that is something I can comment on in the event that it somehow falls over into January and I have to deal with it. But just so everyone's clear, they have not ruled on the merits on that appeal. All they did was deny the stay. But they did have some language in that stay that potentially forecast that decision. So I think Jeff is pointing to that language in that decision.
I think, yeah, that was a good clarification. I was kind of thinking that exact same thing. We've got a couple of minutes left here. I'm going to go to Elena in Phillipsburg. Elena, what did you want to add? And then we'll get Corey's take after the break.
Okay, thank you. Corey, exactly how and to what extent were you involved with the CSKT water compact negotiations? And are you aware that after the state legislature approved it, Senator Daines added amendments violating a number of state and private property constitutional rights, and I'll just add, that are being currently mitigated.
All right. Thank you, Elena. Appreciate that. We do have to go to a break here. We'll get Corey's take on that right after this, and we'll have some other time here with Corey Swanson right before the 9 o'clock hour begins. David Noble in for Aaron Flint.
Your morning espresso starts right here. It's the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
We learned yesterday Biden inflation is through the roof and headed in the wrong direction. It was anything but transitory. You know, we have Joe Biden now catering to his radical base. And in the process, he's standing down in a war on terrorism after Israel had the worst terrorist attack in their history. And he is now aiding and abetting the terrorist group Hamas by pressuring Israel to stop their fight against terrorism, which really is a fight for their very survival. He has abandoned the country of Israel because he needed to appease his radical base.
The Sean Hannity Show from coast to coast later today.
More than 200 fire department jurisdictions trust the Knox entry system to provide secure access to buildings, elevators, and control rooms when seconds matter. Now, businesses, schools, airports, several industrial applications are also using Knox entry to manage controlled access and authorize service activity for critical assets. Now, Knox entry allows you to develop a customized access strategy complete with an audit trail and rapid flexibility. Just go to Knox.com for more information. That's KNOX.com.
Getting quality employees to fill positions in your company is essential, but finding those people can be a major hassle unless you use ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality people a breeze. ZipRecruiter's advanced technology identifies candidates with the right skills, sends you great matches, then you can easily invite them to apply. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See for yourself. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free to try ZipRecruiter for free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
It was a financial surprise that should have surprised no one, especially a banker, or worse yet, a bank regulator. You learn in Finance 101 that the price of a bond is inversely related to its yield. And so when banks held assets in government bonds that they bought when interest rates were almost zero, those assets went down in value as interest rates rose. And so if those banks needed to sell off those bonds, say, to cover a run on their deposits, they were going to take a big loss. Yet it did register a surprise on regulators who rushed to keep depositors whole and quell the panic that was starting to fester. The real surprises are not so easily seen. In the Great Recession, highly rated but poorly understood financial vehicles called collateralized debt obligations turned out to be worthless as housing prices fell. What kinds of risks are out there today that we don't see? It's hard to know, but chances are that if any do arise, they'll be related to higher interest rates. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Life's waiting. Power on with Batteries Plus. Visit one of over 700 locations today.
UFC 300, we will be in the house for the Fusion Fight League here in Montana.
Brought to you from the Montana Hot Spring Spas, the hot tub company that your friends recommend, Studio.
Just
taking your calls live. 406-294-0970. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
David Noble in for Aaron Flint. We're talking to Broadwater County Attorney Corey Swanson, candidate for the Montana Supreme Court. Corey, did you have a response to Elena's comment there right before the break?
Yeah, I did. So when I worked for Tim Fox, he was Montana Attorney General, I was asked to look at the what was not final but was being negotiated, the water compact between the state of Montana and the Salish Kootenai, the consolidated Salish Kootenai tribes. So it's a long story. I'll have to keep a short version of it. But when I came in to that process, I was skeptical and not a supporter of the compact. I was concerned that it was being pushed through in a way, really pushed it through by the Schweitzer administration, the Bullock administration, in a way that was not taking care of the rights of the non-tribal irrigators. And over time, I realized that we really had to have a compact in order for those water rights to be upheld. The reason for that is because the tribe had claims under federal law. There's a U.S. Supreme Court case called Winter. It's actually from Montana. They had claims both from the 1855 Hellgate Treaty and also from their claim is Aboriginal water rights from time immemorial. Well, the only way, if the way that the whole complexity of the system was set up at that time, the only way that we could ensure that non-tribal irrigators on the reservation were going to get their water is through some kind of a negotiated agreement where all the water wasn't used to either fulfill endangered species, trout water flows going to the Columbia Basin, or the tribal treaty rights, or the Aboriginal time immemorial rights. So I don't think this is a perfect agreement, but I do think given that it was a 25-year process to get there, this was the best agreement that we could have at the time. And when I realized that, I worked very hard internally with Governor Bullock's team, with the legislature, with the tribe, with the non-tribal irrigators to try and add things to make it better for those individuals who I was concerned were being underrepresented. And I will tell you that having passed it, it probably saved at least a third of the state of water right owners from having to go back to the water court to have their water rights re-examined and pay their lawyers a second time and have just thousands of claims that they would have to deal with. I think Senator Daines' work to get that thing passed federally was actually very well done. I did consult with his team a little bit and give them suggestions. Some of the things that they did, like the land swap, I didn't know anything about that until it happened and whatever. That was beyond anything that I could deal with. But I do think Senator Daines' efforts, again, were geared toward helping the landowners and the water right owners who might be most vulnerable in that setup, who were the non-tribal members. So I can tell you, it's one of those things where I began as a skeptic and began thinking maybe the fix was in. And I realized eventually, as large and complex as it was, if we wanted to ensure that 100-year family farms could keep operating in that area, that they had to have water. Water is the key to their survival. And that's what our goal was trying to make that happen.
So, Corey, we've only got a minute or two left here. I guess I would say any closing comments, and then if people want to support you or help out, you know, what can they do or where can they go?
Yeah, I appreciate it very much. So my website is swansonforjustice.com, and I'm traveling around the state and doing a lot of going to as many events as I can. I'm also still a full-time county attorney. I've been in trial all week, so I'm raising my head from under the flow and trying to get back into some campaign things. The key thing here for us and for our Supreme Court and for our court system in general is we have to have confidence that the court is focused on interpreting the law and rendering fair and impartial decisions and rulings on what the law means.
Hey, Corey, we're at the end of the show, Corey. I got to cut.